Good morning, Northeast Kingdom. This is Scott Wheeler with the Vermont Voice, a program of 1490 WIKE in Derby. This morning we have with us two movie makers who are visiting the Northeast Kingdom. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, I'd like you to introduce yourself to the audience.
I'm Eleanor Lanahan, and we just came over here from Burlington, Vermont.
And I'm Orlia Dean.
And tell me a little bit about the movie. What group are you from?
We're part of a larger filmmaking project, and it's called the Vermont Movie, and it's a provisional title.
Right.
Maybe it'll be called Freedom and Unity. There are a lot of thoughts, but
right.
It hasn't been decided. And it's a—I don't want to say a collective. We're part of a larger idea that started somewhat with archiving the incredible Vermont history, and then with gathering interviews of people who may not be around forever, and gathering up this whole range of visionary thinking that has had its genesis in Vermont,
right.
As much as we could. But there are about 30, 40 to 50, numbers vary, filmmakers involved in this, and different people have chosen their areas of interest.
Right.
So, and it's been impossible to cover everything that's happened here.
I mean, basically, the idea started with Nora Jacobson, who is a Vermont filmmaker herself,
right.
Has a company called Off the Grid Productions, and her idea was that the process of making this film about the radicals and visionary thinkers that have come out of Vermont over the years, both in the past and in the present, was to actually have the film itself made in a communal spirit, even though it isn't a collective, because Vermont is so much about the community spirit itself, that she thought, wouldn't it be great if all the filmmakers of Vermont, or those who were interested, could collaborate on this film and each contribute a segment to the film, which she will then edit together into a larger feature film.
So this sounds like a whole lot different than the typical Vermont movie that has been made. You know, and there's been some great movies on the history of Vermont made, but this is a bit different, wouldn't you say?
It's much more individualistic, I would say, and a mosaic of the different interests of the different filmmakers in Vermont. So it will reflect more than one point of view. It will actually collectively probably reflect many points of views of a lot of the filmmakers here. And each segment, I can't remember even what all the different subjects are, but it's going to be so different, not just in terms of subject, but also because we each have the freedom to shoot it in our own style. It will actually be a mixture of styles, which will be hard work for Nora, I think, to put together.
So why are you doing this? Why is it important to you?
For me, it's fun to make movies, and the segment that we chose to focus on was alcohol.
Right.
And
I think that's how we became connected.
That's
there.
Exactly
for
it.
Your book.
We drove over to Newport to meet Scott Wheeler because he'd written Rum Runners and Revenuers, and he had a lot of information for us in that book, and he said, yes, I'll give you an interview if you'll let me do an interview of you. So that's how we're here.
And the thing is I have to be nice to you because my interview comes next. So
that's right. We are hoping to interview you soon all about the Rum Runners and Vermont Prohibition, which is very much part of our movie. And I just wanted to add that for me, one of the reasons of making this film is, as you can probably guess from my accent, that I'm not a native Vermonter. I have just become a resident a few years ago. I've come over from England, and I am a filmmaker, and this is a wonderful opportunity for me to get to know the history of Vermont, to get to know the filmmaking community here. Our segment is about Vermont's relationship with alcohol, and more specifically about our radical thinkers are the two co-founders of Alcoholics Anonymous,
right.
Bill Wilson and Bob Smith, who were both born and raised in Vermont. And so this is our focus. It's in a way a history of the birth of AA through Vermont and its relationship with alcohol over the last 200 years.
Well, during Prohibition, we had quite a relationship with alcohol just because being a border community, as you can expect, there was a lot of alcohol crossing the border, and it wasn't only local people, it was also people from southern New England, because they passed through the area in their attempt to quench the thirst of alcohol thirsty Americans.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's one of the things that every time we meet as a group of filmmakers on this film, and we go to retreats and with our historical advisors and so on and so forth, is we've been trying to grapple with the notion of, is there something unique about Vermont?
Right.
And both in terms of its geography, its climate, its people, and so on. You mentioned the border aspect, that we are a border state, and that, of course, has a lot to do with smuggling and prohibition, which you mentioned in your book. So that's something we'd like to hear more about.
Right. Actually, that's one thing I pride myself on, is to find something other people haven't done, because, you know, instead of trying to reinvent the wheel and doing the same thing other people are doing, I like to find these stories, such as Prohibition, talk about what makes us unique. But I think the one thing makes northern climates unique is we love to complain about the weather. We love to complain about it's too cold, it's too snowy, but here's the secret is, the people who complain about it the most are usually the ones who love it the most. It's almost like a badge of honor. It's probably like the same thing as the people who refuse to leave in face of a hurricane, because they're going to show nature.
Yeah.
It's kind of so I think in every section of the country we have these little things that make us unique. Well, in our case, it's we love to talk about how horribly and harsh the weather is, and I think sometimes we exaggerate it a bit just so we can even seem more special.
I agree with you. Another thing that's special about us is that we have town meetings, and it may end up being a theme of our movie. It may be the element that stitches together the segments that filmmakers are doing, because there is no other state that has they have town meeting style meetings, but they don't have ones where actual town legislation is conducted, as far as I know.
Well,
So that is something we've hung on to, and it makes for a stronger grassroots community fabric.
Right.
And we're exploring that on the one hand. For example, we have sort of a thesis, a hypothesis that one thing that's special about it is that it is sort of like a town meeting where, you know, it's one man, one vote. It's everybody's equal. There's no rich or poor. There's you know, if you're a drinker, you're welcome. And it's the same thing in a town meeting, that if you live in this town, you're in the legislature of the town. So we think maybe that was formative.
And so you've been to town meetings yourself, then?
Yeah, yes.
Is town meetings are a real interesting phenomenon, because you go, and you would think, if you looked at the cast of characters that go to them, you'd think, wow, this is like mixing gas and fire, because there's people come from every walk of life, and you just look and you think, these people are not going to be able to communicate. We have long-term Vermonters who are, you know, they practically just come off the farm few times a year to go to town meeting, but then you have newcomers with totally different ideas, and you have people in the middle, and everybody meshes. Seldom is there real controversy. It's an amazing thing, and I think sometimes it's the smaller, more rural towns. Like, when I say rural, I mean, like, there's some communities, like, when they near 5,000, you know, that's the town. There's a lot of the town meeting feeling that is lost, even at that size. But you go to the smaller communities, and they have baked beans, they have donuts, they have hot dogs. It's almost like the lawmaking that goes on, or the thinking that goes on, is secondary to the food and the good times, because it's one time during the year everybody is there.
They all feel that they have a common purpose, that they are part, that if they have to be together, they have to support each other, otherwise they really will be all on their own. And that's why we thought in a way it was similar to the structure of Alcoholics Anonymous, where also you get people from all walks of life getting together at a meeting and sharing. They have a common issue to discuss.
Right. You know, it was funny that you're focusing on alcohol, and we were talking about smuggling and Alcoholics Anonymous. Is just a few weeks ago, I was asked to speak before a group that, to tell you the truth, is I thought they had disappeared into the pages of history. The WCTU is the Women Christian Temperance Union. They had their national conference in South Burlington a few weeks ago.
That's right.
And I was totally amazed because, I thought soon after Prohibition they disappeared. Well, they showed me that they are alive and well. And I will tell you, I've spoken in front of many groups, and that was one fun group to be in front of.
Are they still advocating Prohibition?
They advocate temperance, whether that they do still ask people to sign the pledge to abstain from alcohol, but that is only one of the things that they're also very into women's issues, which they were back then, because they're known a lot for they're known for their stance against alcohol, but they also have many other stances. One of their biggest stances is on women's issues. So yes, but they do still have they call it pledging, to pledge never to drink alcohol again.
And that's I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
The Women's Temperance Union is something that is definitely a part of our film, because we are looking historically at the relationship with alcohol. And indeed, we have some wonderful archive footage of the temperance movement, and definitely the women's issues as well, because from that came afterwards also the fight for women's rights, and they were definitely instrumental in pushing women forward. And so it's an interesting relationship.
Well, here in the Northeast Kingdom, on the border, you know, you had, during Prohibition, you had the two sides. Well, you had actually three sides during Prohibition. You had the people who smuggled. You had the WCTU that was in this area as well. But then you had a lot of people who just didn't care. You know, it just didn't care one way or the other. Just live and let live and just leave us alone. For those of you just tuning in, this is Scott Wheeler with the Vermont Voice. Our guests this morning are two filmmakers, Eleanor Lanahan and Orly Yadin. So, when is this movie going to be done?
Well, it's due to be completed in 2009 to coincide with the 400th anniversary of Lake Champlain,
right,
which is next year. And I very much hope it will be done by then.
So, how are people going to get a chance to watch it?
So far, we haven't had to concern ourselves. That's always a filmmaker's nightmare. I think there's a built-in audience around Vermont. It'll probably be shown in every festival that happens around the state, and there'll be town hall screenings, and it's hoped that it'll be of more national interest.
Right.
And it probably will be, because a lot of countries are fascinated by our town meeting system,
right,
and some of the things that have come out of Vermont are global,
right,
so parts of them will interest various groups.
Could you give me some examples of other people maybe that you could think of that came out of Vermont, or ideas or concepts? Or
well, I mean, for example, thinking about international interest, somebody is doing a segment about Peter Schumann and the Bread and Puppet Theater.
Right.
Now they are known worldwide. It's not just a Vermont issue. There is, who else? Somebody's doing a segment about the Abenakis,
right,
again, of international interest.
Mm-hmm. And their current hopes of getting a tribal recognition.
Right.
And nobody's doing the segment on Joseph Smith yet, although,
right,
you know, there are gaps, and there's hope that that'd be covered. Senator George Aiken is an icon, a man who said, let's just declare victory and get out of Vietnam.
his widow is still alive and well. She's Lola Aiken. is just a gem of a human being. So if you should do it, whoever does a segment on Senator Aiken, or as she calls him, the governor, mm-hmm. because he always liked his title better, the governor,
mm-hmm.
she'd be more than happy to help you out.
That's good. Although one of the filmmakers contributing is Rick Moulton, who has made a documentary on Aiken, and I think he's gathered amazing footage.
Right.
And that's part of the mission of this, is to archive a lot of what's already out there. Grace Paley was interviewed at the 11th hour, and then she died recently too, our poet and very gifted activist.
We were also, before we came on the air, we were also talking about the commune movement here in Vermont. Now, how does that tie into your thinking?
Well, Nora Jacobson herself, the overall producer, the originator of the whole thing, is looking intensely into the communal life in Vermont, and has been going around interviewing various former residents and visiting the sites. And I mean, how does it tie into it's just visions for a better world. It's about living interconnectedly, and I don't know what her slant on it is, but I'm sure some people, you know, have been changed by it forever. There's some people who still have values that were formed in the commune, and for others it was something they did that's over.
Well, I think part of the whole notion of this film is that Vermont hasn't just given birth to these radical thinkers, but has also attracted people from out of state, like the people who formed the early communes in the late 60s, early 70s. They mostly came from out of Vermont. They were attracted to live here. Peter Schumann, Bread and Puppet, same thing. They are not native Vermonters, but there's something about Vermont that attracted these people.
Well, I think part of it it depends on what you classify as native Vermonter. My grandmother was from Newfoundland, but other than that, some of my relatives go back to Native American days. But I would like to think that it's also Vermonters that welcomes them here, because I honestly feel that we are a live and let live people, and we, you know, basically we allow people to do their own thing, and it's and I think, you know, I'd like to think it's the Vermonters that really open our arms to newcomers. Do you think that plays a role, at least?
It could be, or at least probably more qualified to answer
I was welcomed here by the native Vermonters, or by the Vermonters I met when I first came here. I certainly was made to feel welcome.
I moved up here from Washington, D.C. in 1971, and I had twin sons in 1974, and somebody said, I'm not sure they're Vermonters. Just because the cat has kittens in the oven doesn't make them muffins, does it?
But you know, a lot of this newcomer versus locals, you know, I think a lot of times, too, a lot of people do a lot of it in jest, too, you know, kind of like good spirits.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Because technically, if you go by Vermont terms, I'm not a Vermonter. You're supposed to be here like 5 or 7 generations, according to some. And my grandmother, who was from Newfoundland, disqualifies me. So, about the commune movement.
Who's counting?
You know, we have the commune movement, though, was alive and well here in Orleans County. We had several communes, and some of them went on to be some of the most very productive people. They, even though the communes are no longer, many of them are here, and they've opened up businesses. Some of them have totally different ways of life, and others of them, they're caught kind of in a time warp.
Yes.
They haven't changed a bit, for good or bad.
My good friend had a commune down in Putney, Vermont, and Red Clover Farm, and a lot of things came out of that commune. They had a free Vermont newspaper, which is now defunct. They had the People's Garage, where they fixed cars for free, an idea that I don't know that they invented it, but there's a Good News Garage in Burlington that's somewhat in that spirit. And they started a collective restaurant, Common Ground Restaurant, in Brattleboro, which is still going to this day. And so I think that maybe some communal people are less territorial or capitalistic than others.
There is another aspect, not trying to be negative at all, but in our research, as we've been researching our subject, which is alcohol and so on, when Vermont had its own prohibition in the second half of the 19th century, some of our historians have advised us, and maybe you, I'm sure you have some insight into it as well, that part of the whole prohibition movement was in a way a way for the old-timers of Vermont to curtail or to put down the newcomers who tended to be like the Italians and the Germans and the Irish, who had different drinking habits, and they were Catholic as opposed to the Protestants.
That wasn't just a Vermont thing. That was actually a national, even national prohibition. That was a, you're absolutely right, is, and I'm not sure if it was to put them down. It was at least they didn't understand, because they were coming from a lot of Germans, a lot of Italians. But here's the thing is national prohibition, what happened was, as we were near national prohibition, 1919, 1918, well, it became law in 1920, but it was passed in 1919, is, you know, near in World War One. Well, once the United States was involved in World War One, the anti-alcohol people, they then instantly said, okay, all right, first of all, who were we fighting during World War One? The Germans. Who were the beer brewers in this country? The Germans. They tied, if you support alcohol, you must support the enemy. Hmm. So they drew that connection. Even though by the time Prohibition became law, the war was over, it had already burned into people's mind. If you were not for Prohibition, you were for the enemy.
Oh, I never made that connection.
That's how they did it. So it wasn't only a Vermont thing. This was a whole national movement for Prohibition. They tied these ethnic, the drinking habits of the ethnic groups into it. And, you know, some of it was sincere, is there were a lot of people who did not drink and they did not want excessive use of alcohol, but there were probably others who used it as a weapon. So, well, with only about 5 more minutes left here.
I'm not sure what you meant by used it as a weapon.
No, as in to keep ethnic groups down.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Is or lack of
to undermine their social customs.
Right.
Yeah.
For those of you just tuning in, this is Scott Wheeler with the Vermont Voice. Our guests this morning are two filmmakers, Eleanor Lanahan and Orlie Yadin. So where else have you been in Vermont in this pursuit to understand Vermont's role in alcohol?
I think our first road trip was down to Dorset, Vermont, because we started just exploring the life of Bill Wilson, one of the founders of AA. We got there to Dorset and learned that Bill Wilson was also from St. Johnsbury. I mean, Dr. Bob Smith, the co-founder. And I hadn't realized that at all. But the more you explore the history of AA, I mean, I had no idea before, until we started working, that Vermont had a prohibition from 1853 to 1903,
yes.
And then it had a very complicated local option program,
right,
where each town could decide, which led to all sorts of problems. And then it wasn't very long in between prohibitions, because in 1920 along came national prohibition. And I had no idea all that had been going on here. And then we've been all over the place, looking at breweries, because, you know, this is not an anti-drinking movie we're making at all. We just realized the topic is huge, and a lot of brewing's going on here. There are more microbreweries per capita than any other state in Vermont.
Another interesting thing that we've discovered in our travels, for example, after having visited Dorset and speaking to people there in the Historical Society and trying to figure out Bill Wilson's background,
right,
when we discovered indeed that Dr. Bob Smith, the other co-founder, was also a Vermonter, we went straight to St. Johnsbury, where he was born and bred. And each trip leads us to discover new things about the location. So in St. Johnsbury, apart from visiting his childhood home, we discovered a lot more about the role of the Fairbanks family there and their role generally in the town, having funded all these buildings, but also as strict anti-drinkers. So each trip leads us to discover not just things about alcohol, but also about other local historical issues and events. The North Congregational Church in St. Johnsbury played a role, because that's where Bob Smith went to as a child, and his parents, and so on. So this is a fascinating, in a sense, almost you could say that the alcohol and the AA aspect of our film has almost just become a hook to discover other things. And this film, our segment, is very much a journey of discovery. And it is about us on this journey of discovery, not knowing always what we might find.
Okay. Well, we've run out of time now.
Well, thank you for having us.
One last question. How long is this movie going to be? It seems like each one of your segments could be a whole movie.
Absolutely.
That's true. And so we're it's up to Nora Jacobson to edit it and take the pieces that are relevant to her movie. But we're thinking of it as a separate short that we're doing ourselves.
Right.
It's at least a half an hour.
Right. Okay. Oh, each segment?
No, just ours. We can't speak for the others.
Okay.
But we are going to make it also as a separate thing, and then she will incorporate what she wants.
Well, thank you for coming in this morning.
Thank you for having us.
Very much.
Thank you for listening to the Vermont Voice on 1490 WIKE in Derby. This is Scott Wheeler, the host of the Vermont Voice, wishing you a great day in Vermont's last frontier, Vermont's Northeast Kingdom.
Region here in Orleans County is typically a quiet place to live, but in 1972 and 73, two parties that became known as Mac parties rocked this section of the world in more ways than one. Partygoers partied it up the first year in East Charleston and the second year in Holland. The parties brought with them thousands of people in controversy. The party in Holland ended in gunfire. Hello, I'm Scott Wheeler of Derby, the publisher of Vermont's Northland Journal. The feature of the October issue of the journal is Mac Parties. The good, the bad, and the ugly. In addition to numerous photos, memorabilia, and news clippings of the parties, Pat Hunt of Morgan and Brian Smith of Derby share their memories of the party that rocked the kingdom. The Northland Journal is designed to share and preserve the history of this rural section of Vermont. The journal is sold in stores throughout the Northeast Kingdom, and subscribers in about 40 states have it delivered to their home. Check out the journal's website at www.northlandjournal.com.